Welcome to First Train, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. Today is the second Gen Con recording, day three, we're starting with. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Kiwi has made it in this week.
Yep.
How was your first Gen Con day overall?
I feel like it was, I mean, just as busy as I expected it to be, but having flown in and gotten in to the hotel at 2 o'clock this morning, it's definitely been a long day. And I feel like when you're here for 4 days, you can space it out a little bit more.
Yeah, tried to cram in a lot.
Yeah.
So yesterday we talked about previous Gen Cons.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite part of the previous Gen Cons?
I think just the playing the games and getting a chance to play with people who are super excited about the games.
Play with someone other than us, you mean?
No, not necessarily.
It's a taste of what it's like to have other friends.
Oh, yeah. You know what the best part about Gen Con is? Is other people teach you the rules. Yeah. That's the best part. I don't have to listen to y'all's bullshit.
So today we started with, of course, Cafe Potichu.
Of course.
Naturally.
So
delicious, delicious food.
Then we went over to the Meeple Source booth.
Yep.
For Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yep. Wanted to get her to sign my... A lot of people had the whole box of Wingspan because they were probably buying it at the convention. But since we already had it, I just brought the instruction booklet because I didn't want to bring the whole thing in the plane. So I got her to sign it. And then also Natalie Rojas was there, one of the artists, and she got to sign it. So that was super cool.
Super awesome.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but they were just out there and they were still Saturday, day three, smiling.
I just love, like, I enjoy that part of the hobby where, like, somebody has made this thing that clearly they put a lot of love into, and, like, other people love it so much that it's just like, here, please sign my copy of this game.
Yeah. Like, I think we saw a lot of that today.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot. And, like, people were even saying, like, hey, if you purchase the game, like, the designer's right here. Mm-hmm. You can get them to sign it. Right. And it's just like, that's cool.
And then we headed over to Thunderworks booth to pick up Role Player Cartographer.
We got it right here. We can actually... Cartographers.
Okay, so
Role Player Cartographer.
Yes.
More than one cartographer.
Yes. Kiwi had pre-ordered that?
Yeah, I pre-ordered that based on the recommendations from Mandy and Suzanne, who seemed to enjoy it. Plus, it's in that Role Player universe, which, I mean, classic fantasy, but I really enjoy the art.
Yeah. Like, it's a little different than classic fantasy from Mars.
I mean, like, tropes, not tropes, because that's more of a storytelling thing, but like classes and how the game kind of gets played out, like, is kind of classic fantasy. But I think in terms of art style,
we actually got to talk to the head of
the guy who designed Role Player,
right? The head of Thunderworks.
Well, I know he. Well, we talked to him about Locked Up. He explained Locked Up to us,
right? But he didn't design.
He's in the middle of designing another
adventure version of the whole thing. So basically, he said he designed Role Player, and then he wanted to expand on it. So he's kind of built this whole world that has all these interconnecting pieces now, which is really cool. I like when people do that. Like, I like when Red Ribbon Games does it with their stuff. So,
and Locked Up was really. Actually, it sounded fun. I think you and I were both kind of intrigued about it.
Yeah, I might be getting that one tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm not an impulse buyer. I buy on Sunday when the field has narrowed down to what has not sold out.
Yeah. But yeah, it sounded like an interesting one.
Yeah, that was one that Eric had showed me before. And I was just kind of like, oh, that's, you know, cool. It's in the Role Player, you know, universe. And just like, like, I don't know how big I'm into it. But like, once I heard him like explain how everything went into it, like the mechanics that he has going into it, like, seemed super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, if you weren't getting it, like, that would probably be on my list of things that I wanted to get.
And then we still get to play. So we sat down to play Bargain Quest from Renegade Games. We didn't play a full game. We played maybe half a game.
It was too much more. Yeah.
But it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
We're talking about Bargain Quest. Yeah. Thanks for joining the podcast.
No, I was still looking up the Thunder, and it's a Lockup, not Locked Up.
Thanks.
Cartographers
more than Lockup.
Okay.
But yeah, for Bargain Quest, like that, we sat down and played that. That was, I think we all really enjoyed that. We would have bought it, but it was already sold out.
Yeah,
but I think it's supposed to be coming to store soon, they said.
Yeah, 2 weeks, I think.
So we're looking forward to that one. It was kind of a, how could you describe it?
So the way I would describe it is you are a shop owner who is trying to convince heroes to come to your shop. So that you can sell them goods so that they can go fight a bad guy.
Right. Yeah. And the better they fight, the better it represents your shop and the goods you sold them.
Yeah. So it's almost like you are a sponsor. It's
sponsor. But I think there's some of the different cards and abilities and things that sometimes you want them to die.
Yeah,
that's from what I can tell. So, like, you're not always trying to just let them win.
Yeah, you're trying to do what's best for yourself. But I thought it was a super cool, like, you're not the hero.
No.
You're the guy outfitting the hero.
I like that.
Yeah, and it had good art.
It did. Yes. It had great art. Yeah. I like the characters.
The characters, the shops were very well done. Mm-hmm. You folded the shops were your placemat, basically, right? Your game mat.
Mm-hmm.
And it started off folded, so you got to see the outside, and then you opened it up and got to see the inside of the shop, which I thought was, I mean, you don't have to have it like that, but it gives you that extra, it was very well thought.
You don't even need that board the way it's laid out, but like it's just a great way to
to engage the player a little bit more.
Right. I really enjoy it. I know we couldn't play longer, but I wish we could have played longer.
Yeah, it was a really good game. It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think we'll probably end up with that at some point.
That one seemed to fit the hype. That one had some hype behind it going with the convention, and I think that's a game that fits it.
Do we get to talk about what I got to do while we were at Raven?
Renegade.
I got to meet Mandy and talk with her and get my little fangirl selfie with her. And she looks fantastic, as she always does, with a special Renegade sweater. So I think if you're into fashionable board game attire, I think we need more of these great board game companies. We'd love to get some of that out.
Is this like the callback to the sushi roll saying that we need more sushi roll?
Except I think from the fan point of also wanting to wear something that maybe supports the designers versus just the game. And that's fashionable versus just being like a t-shirt or a pencil case or something like that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Although a sushi roll pencil case would be pretty cool.
Naturally.
Yeah.
So after playing Bargain Quest, we also played at Z-Man Games. We happened to just stop and look at Pandemic Rep Response, and they were like, hey, a table just opened. You want to play? We're like, sure.
Yeah.
So we sat down and played a full game of that, and that was
super fast.
It was fast, and we actually won. It was cool. We actually won.
Yeah.
Sure, it was on easy mode. I'm sure it would make it a lot harder, but it was a cool game.
The designer was there and introduced us to the game to begin with as well.
Same designer who designed Fuse, which we also enjoy. So it had that similar aspect of dice rolling with the time management with the timer. So in that one, you are on a crew of a plane that is being sent to different cities to help cure. So if you think about drop supplies to help cure. So if you think about it, like, it's like the micro level of, you know, pandemics, like the macro level. And like, now you're on that plane that's flying to the next location. And you're rolling dice and taking turns to try and get those dice around. I like the way it played out. I don't know if it would replace, we already have games in the collection that
Fuse,
Kitchen Rush.
Regular pandemic
that I think fill that itch.
Yeah. It's a little different in that everyone is rolling one at a time instead of everybody at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it's a little less hectic. Mm-hmm.
And it's pandemic only in that it's in the same sort of universe.
Right.
If pandemic can be its own universe.
It is now.
But that's it. It doesn't play like other
pandemic
games. Yeah.
We stop by Dice Tower to pick up.
Yep, I got Jeff Engelstein and Isaac Shalev's board game design book focusing on different mechanics, some of the types of games.
Mechanics.
I'm gonna send it home with
a straight book of mechanics.
I'm gonna send it home with BTs.
Just gonna study up.
Throw it in the trash.
But we got to meet Jeff right before that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was super cool to get to like meet the people that you've been listening to podcasts for, like, you know. playing the games that they've made. Like, it's super cool to get to meet. Like, and that's a great part of the convention, too, is you get to meet.
Yeah, we've met so many designers.
Yeah.
Artists. And
talk to people who have met maybe designers that we haven't. And just, I think everyone just really enjoys that aspect or getting to demo games with them, you know?
It's so fun to be taught. I think several of our things we heard on the hall today were by the designer.
Yeah, well, I mean, Lockup wasn't, but that was
but he's
like,
oh, the
he's pretty, he's pretty into it. But yeah, so Pandemic was the designer.
Kane Klesko.
Yeah.
And then I believe Cosmos Game, Roll for Adventure.
Oh, yeah, Roll for Adventure.
I'm pretty sure that was the designer.
Yeah,
that was the designer. Yeah, so when people are excited about the game, it's easy to also get excited about the game. And the person who's probably going to be most excited about it is the designer.
Or the artist, or somebody involved in the making.
Yeah, and I noticed it last, or on Thursday, because, you know, I wasn't here, but I was able to watch Board Game Geek's live stream on Twitch. And you could definitely tell, like, there were some games that people were super excited about that, like, had somebody just walked up and was like, hey, you want to play this game about balloons?
Oh yeah.
It's like, no, I don't think I want to play a game about balloons. But you know, you come up with somebody like, I've got this amazing game about balloons.
Or like when I went and stopped at the Pillage Village guy and he's like, come play this great game. You collect turnips and turn them into relics. And I was like, alright, I'm in. Like, yeah.
Which doesn't really interesting about it.
And then I picked up Porks by Keymaster Games for a friend that I think will really enjoy it. It's got some pretty cool art.
Read the back of the box.
Yeah, no, I think the art is really cool and something I wanted to talk about, because if you have been to a national parks service in the recent years and ever stroll through their souvenirs, they'll all have postcards of their monuments in this like 1920s postcard style. And that's what all the cards and the art is like. Didn't you say it was like, it was the same artist that had actually done those?
Yeah. So the art is by the same series that does these postcards for the parks.
And the description just says group of artists that did the illustrations for parks.
Yeah. And then the components are really good. It has a lot of wonderful wood pieces, different like wood animals, the hikers. And I guess the concept of the game is that you're placing your hiker on different trails trying to get across all the parks, and there's like different weather tokens, and you're the first person to experience the weather, you get a token. And if you're the first person to like see an animal, you get to just pick up.
Explain it kind of like Tokaido style.
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar, like you kind of move and whatever that mechanic is. Yeah. So yeah, it just seemed like really cool. It had a great table presence. It looked like a pretty easy game. It's for a friend who's somewhat into board games, but not heavy ones. So I think it'd be cool. And then it comes in with like the game trays, which is great. And it looked, you know.
And it was starting to sell out. So obviously many other people found it.
Yeah, it's a pretty popular game, it looked like. So after the vendor hall, we headed over to our scheduled game of the Artemis Project.
Mm-hmm. It's not the Ares Project by Jeff Engelstein.
No.
I'll tell you that.
It's big time.
Grand Gamers Guild is the publisher.
So, Artemis Project by the Grand Gamers Guild.
Yeah.
So, how would you describe this?
Well, we were just doing the prototype, but like the actual game just recently came out. Is that my understanding?
Yeah.
So, it was released. It was up for sale. I'm guessing they had limited copies, so they were just using the old prototype.
So, we are colonizing a moon of Jupiter that happens to be an ice planet. We are just barely on the verge of, you know, creating a habitable colony, but we have to continue building it up, and all the minerals and things that we want are from the sea, and so you start there because that's the most like best place you can live, and then you gather all the things you need so that you can move up to the surface, start using those. So it had a neat dice placement mechanic where you rolled the dice and then those values corresponded to how much of one resource you could take for the minerals or the energy, or how much you were willing to pay for a building. or give you the ability to work or to hire or train workers.
And you had expeditions you could go on.
Yeah, and you could go on expeditions too. Yeah.
Which would give you various rewards and different things like that. So basically everyone would roll their dice and then you put them into position and then, you know, certain numbers would beat other numbers or you're trying to add up to numbers or you're bidding. So different mechanics for each of kind of the six little
stations. If we're talking mechanics, dice placement, aka worker placement, so to speak.
So the ones that they list are auction bidding, dice rolling, set collection, take that, and worker placement. Well, I'm not sure where the take that is. So like the cool thing about it is that dice are always in order. So if someone's played a five on energy, because they want five energy, if I play a four, I push their five to the side and I get to take my four first.
Right. And then if you're bidding, like I mentioned, we didn't really get
Eric
beat you on getting some of the
resource. I knocked him out of like one of the resources and expedition.
Yep, and hiring one of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know that I'd call that take that. It's a little bit, maybe a little more aggressive than a normal Euro, but it wasn't like.
It was take that in the same way that other worker placements are take that. Where
I would say it was a little bit more, because you could be a little bit more targeted, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting. So one of our normal topics, right, about a game is thinking about player interaction. And so while we were playing it, I kept thinking about that because there is the, you know, and the demonstrator.
Lauren?
Yeah,
I remember that one.
Great job.
She did a good job.
Yeah, she was again managing a large amount of
four or five different groups playing at least three different games.
Yeah, and they're not
light games.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a super heavy game, but it wasn't a light game.
It took a good 10 minutes for her to.
And she did a good job.
No, she did, but
she spent 15 minutes at the one table.
Yeah.
And then, it's rough.
But one of the things she said was, you know, that kind of triggered that player interaction was, you know, make sure you're looking at
other people's dice,
so you know what to do.
Right.
But at the same point, it wasn't, right, as interactive as, like, Paris, for instance, which obviously...
No, it wasn't. I wouldn't quite consider it take that. I'd say it's a little more... Because a normal worker placement, you're kind of like, I'm going to put it here. I think you might want that. But this one I can see. You put dice here. You want this. I know that you, like there are a couple times, like I looked at you, you had like a two left. I had a four. I knew you couldn't beat me. Mm. And I took you out of that expedition.
Yeah, that's true.
So like I could be a little bit more targeted, but I don't think it was like a, super competitive way.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can probably play it pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think about the artwork?
So I like the on our prototype it was a little bland.
Right.
I think going over to the actual game it looked a lot nicer.
Had that fun little spaceship that had the actual meeples in it.
Yep, and it was had more pastel colors, which there are a lot of games that use like so it's fun to see like different colors. Mm-hmm. I thought the production it looked really good. It had a nice and the meeples, so the copy that we played with, everything was cubes. So you had to remember, like, and you didn't really need to remember, but it was like blue was engineers, purple was scientists.
But it was definitely color coordinated versus the other one had the shapes of the various pieces.
Right.
So if you had difficulty with the color schemes, color impaired.
So like the red was Marines, and you could clearly tell that they had a rifle from the wooden meeple that they
put. Which was interesting because that whole color spectrum thing was something that Lauren said she actually encountered in her playgroup. So, I feel like we just brought it up one day, but I mean, it really is a thing to keep in mind with some of the players that you're playing with and thinking about that when you're designing games and the color schemes that you end up choosing.
It was a fun game. I would play it again.
Going back to Eric, I think they're... Artwork was good. The components were definitely better in the final one.
Yep.
I didn't really read any of the cards to really look at what the buildings were doing thematically. Maybe I would have been in the final edition, but I would say the art didn't really stand out to me.
No.
On the cards.
I think,
but maybe the final version had better ones. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where like it's definitely a Euro because you could have taken the theme and put it anywhere.
I wouldn't say anywhere. I think the theme went pretty. I think it was pretty tied to its theme better.
Yeah, I just think that you could have. I'll agree. Like, I think for a Euro, it was tied to theme a lot better. But I think that you'd be able to find.
I mean, compared to like Streets of Paris, but I think this was still pretty good.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I would put it on my list for things to get just because Dice Hospital is definitely a different game. And it doesn't use dice placement the same, but there's dice manipulation. Mm-hmm. But I think I would rather play Dice Hospital than Artemis Project.
Yeah, for me, I thought it was actually lighter. I was expecting a heavier game. Not super heavy, but heavier on scale.
So that, because I confused it with Ares Projects.
Which is the second time you've confused Jeff Engelstein with the one we actually played.
Yes.
So actually that was a little lighter than I was expecting. Which I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. But
and it played in an hour.
It did. It was an hour. Yeah, no, I enjoyed it, but it didn't really jump out to me as a favorite.
I mean, I don't know if I'd go out of my way to play it again.
See, I don't know, because I feel like I'd pick Artemis Project over some other work replacements. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got some dinner and then headed to play Detective, which was in a pretty large event where they were doing a specific scenario.
Yeah, so it's the scenario they designed specifically for Con so that they could demo the game without giving away the other cases in the game. Mm-hmm. What was really cool was so they had everybody in groups of 4 to 6, and then we actually got taught the whole room. There's probably what, like 80 people in there, maybe.
Yeah.
Ignacy Chebyshev was the one that actually taught us how to play the game. Again, going back to,
right,
it's super cool to learn the game from the designer.
Right. Yeah, and he gave a light version, so it wasn't too much to grasp. Like, I think he just wanted people to sit down, people who are already into detecting games, but also have that involvement with the technology.
Should we describe the game?
Yeah.
So it's a detective game that's
its name.
Yeah.
It's good. Well named.
But it brings in the internet to it to treat it like a more of a, it's a modern crime game. Mm-hmm. So you get to look more at like lab reports and fingerprints come into it and all kinds of other things, but they use a website that they've built that goes with it. So like a card in the game will say like, hey, go to, file at 063. You type that into the database and it spits out more than what was on the card.
Right.
Yeah. So your clues, so to speak, are kind of coming out on the card.
Yeah.
And then you have this other component that you can also bring into it that tries to track, which apparently we learned also tracks part of your scoring based on what types of files you're seeing in that.
Yeah, so you're also collecting evidence in it.
Yeah.
So like you find fingerprints and you add it to your kind of...
Yeah, and then they have a matching system where if the fingerprint matches one of the people that you've encountered, it will tell you like, hey, this is a X percent match to this other person.
Right. So in some ways, it's very similar to the Sherlock Holmes, the newer one, right, where you were given a task, right, to solve this one crime. You go around to different places, except in this version, too, don't forget you've got time tracks on it as well. You only are given so many days to solve it.
Yeah, right.
You're supposed to only work an 8-hour day. You can work longer than that, but you take on stress like you would in real life.
Which you kind of like, because one of the issues with Sherlock is you kind of be like, when do we stop?
Right.
This is kind of like, we kind of know when you're supposed to stop.
Yeah. So.
And like you get minus points for the number of steps you took past Sherlock. But in this game, one, if you take too much stress, you lose the case.
Mm-hmm.
And two, the stress that you have is minus points from your final score.
I mean, the points in Sherlock are just literally how many minimal moves can you do to solve it? I mean, you get very caught up on those points.
Yeah, how much longer is Sherlock? Yeah, which is a weird, I think, component of the game. And more people that I've talked to that play that game are also like, they've just come to the conclusion you're never supposed to beat.
You're not allowed to. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But, and that's one thing, though, in that game, and when you solve it at the end, so, right, we were instructed just to... who did the murder, right? And then what the motive was. But then you get to the end and you're asking questions beyond that. And you're like,
it's like, how much did you understand the case?
Yeah. I was just told to do this, so we focused on this. We ended up getting them all right.
Yeah, but I think we made educated guesses based on the facts that we have.
Right, and that's the thing, because that's where we did not get max points. Because we did not get all that evidence. Yeah.
And I think the big difference is, too, is that you get like a little quiz on the website to track how much, like to answer the questions. Whereas Sherlock Holmes, you just get those 10 questions. You have to answer those 10 questions. But it's not multiple choice. So you can
run. Oh, yeah. You can run.
Yeah.
It's multiple choice for this one on here. So like you're able to take those choices that you have and then make educated guesses about what you learned. For me personally, I like Detective more than I like Sherlock Holmes.
Because you didn't feel as stupid.
I still feel dumb.
Why? We got it all right.
Yeah, but you got three.
But we guessed.
But we made, educated guesses. Yeah. And we were in a time constraint.
But if the multiple choices were not there, I do not think we would have done as well as we did.
Okay.
But I liked the factoring in like the fingerprints and how the system like comes back and tells you, like,
yeah,
hey, this is a partial match. Like that's something you can't really do with the way Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is laid out. You can't do that.
Well, it makes sense too. It wasn't any time period.
19th century versus 21st century.
I'm not sure which one I like better because I still really like the whole Victorian.
Yeah, era. I would do both of them.
But they're both
intrigued and want to play more.
And then the expansion apparently is like a 1980s Miami Vice style.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a lot of fun doing the detective.
Yeah, and that was our day.
Day three.
That was day three, or day one for some of us. Day two for others.
You guys are a mess.
We're just all over the place.
Day four of Gen Con. We are recording a couple days later due to some flights and travel, but we will recap as best we can. We began the day by going over to the playtest hall run by Double Exposure. It is our first year trying out the playtest hall. What did we think?
I liked the way they had it set up, especially at the beginning when they, like some of the games wanted specific demographics. So BP ended up going to a game where they wanted female gamers, but there were a bunch more. So they were looking for, what was it, people who were into Euros was one.
Heavy
people
Euros, who were, war, yep, game,
war
and,
games,
family, full family.
And then people who did not live in an urban area.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cool one.
Yeah.
It was about an urban transportation game that they wanted some rural folk to judge.
some mountain folk.
What? Just non-urban people.
It's a inside joke.
Oh, okay.
From 15 years ago.
From a very long time ago.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I guess they called that out first to get those specific people, and then you kind of got called up in order of sign in to kind of pick out what game you might be interested in. They just had a short little like one sentence blurb.
Yeah, I think some of them had mechanics on it. Some of them had like very general themes.
So we just went and sat down and...
So they didn't really have a theme. They discussed a couple while we were playing, but essentially it was everybody had a hand of the same five workers or employees, and they had different like descriptors. One was big, there was pointy, shiny,
and loud.
And loud. and then there was none. And then the cards that were out had number values and colors, and then some of them had some of those descriptors as well. So each of the workers would go for the first number that had that descriptor. And then if there wasn't one of those cards, it would take the very last card. And then there was one worker that was lazy and would take the very first card he came to. And we played four times, I think. So the first time, first two times we played through exactly how they had it. Cause I think the game was so short that, we got it at like the very end. So then we played it again once everybody sort of understood. And then the second two times through, we changed the rules up a little bit. So it was a lot more thinky for a super short game. I actually enjoyed it, even for being a super basic play test that they had.
Right. Yeah, I think the base mechanic was really cool.
Yeah.
So BP, how about your game? Please describe the mechanics in detail.
Right. It was a social, I don't know what these things are called. It was like a conversation game. It was a party game. There were a bunch of cards that you were given about various topics. And you chose one out of three or four. You put it down in the middle and everyone voted whether or not they wanted to talk about that topic. And there were various levels of interaction you could play with or competitiveness that you could play with. So I could see by the end of the first round that we played how it would be really useful in like a work environment, trying to learn to communicate with the people right in your office or at like a counselor's office, especially if you had particular questions and topics, set aside for, trying to unpack various things or, obviously they had them categorized so that there were more work appropriate questions too, because some of them were kind of controversial. Like I think one that I picked that nobody wanted to talk about was, should servers be paid a wage or just rely on tips? One of those types of questions that can seem, kind of controversial by some means. So, it was pretty interesting. Like I said, there were different competitive levels, different like kind of restrictions on how you had to hold the conversation. Sometimes you were asked to give like a complete opposite point of view. Sometimes you were told to talk as if you're, talking to children. People kind of voted and made sure, hey, you had like the best perspective. And there was this other interactive thing that you had to do throughout it where you had to ask people, like, for instance, to expand on a point. So there were ways to make it much more interactive to kind of force people, it was pretty interesting. I'm not a big party game person. So, my question was though, I guess more generally going to be about the playtesting. How far along do you think, the games had to be in development to qualify, or did the developers also have to, I'm assuming, pay to have a table there?
So I don't think it matters how far along you were, because like ours was very, very early and the one next to us was like a full game. But they do have to pay. I forget. It's like $500 to put the game in. Yeah, it's a hefty fee, I think, to get in there.
Yeah. So I looked it up real quick. It is for 4 2-hour sessions. It's $300.
Wow. That's not even the whole weekend.
And sessions. eight 2-hour sessions is $600.
So, I mean, if you have something that you're really considering about ready to have on the market, or the game I played was actually, I think the Kickstarter was already available, that would seem worth it, right, to start to get that feedback.
I mean, I personally would probably wait until further along, like probably right before you're ready to start pitching to actually pay that much, but... I mean, I guess if you want to get some good feedback.
But that $300 also includes 2 4-day passes.
Mm.
Okay, well, that's not so bad then.
Yeah. And the 8 2-hour sessions, so the $600 one, includes 4 4-day passes. It's a GM badge, which from my reading is essentially a 4-day badge. Because it said if you want additional ones, you have to pay for 4-day badges. So that's what I'm assuming.
Okay.
So basically a $220 value, and then you're paying $80. So $20, $10 an hour for playtesters.
Not bad.
That's not so bad then.
Yeah, that doesn't sound nearly as bad.
Right. So what did we think of overall, like, the playtesting experience?
I think, I mean, your mileage could vary. I think Eric and I had a much better time. I think, I don't want to talk for BP, but she seems kind of iffy on the game that she got. So I could see, like, you could end up with a game that just straight hot garbage and you're sitting there for 2 hours playing it. But then you could, you know, have a fun game with people who are enjoyable to be at the table with and right. have a good time.
Yep.
I mean, I think despite all that, I still think, I mean, if you're into gaming and you are able to articulate your experience in some sort of a comprehensible fashion, I think it would be a good experience. I mean, you could still go sit down in the demo hall, for instance, or even go into the vendor hall and spend, you know, maybe not 2 hours, but, you know, a good chunk of your time. You know, I mean, I'm just thinking of one of the later games that we sat down to, and we were all just ready to bolt until, you know, we were a few rounds into it. I mean, yeah. And I think we may not have paid for those seats, but like some of them, right? Like you did pay, and if you know, maybe you didn't check it out very much, like it could have just been as bad an experience. So I don't know if just because it was playtesting, like it was any better or worse. I think it was an interesting experience and I wouldn't mind experiencing it again. And I think it is something that, again, if you're really into games and, you know, helping to provide some feedback to the developers, I think everybody should go take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed it because, I mean, this is kind of what we do is play a game and then talk about, you know, hey, what could have been different?
Right.
How could this have been a little better? And this is a chance to actually say that, and it might happen. like it would be really cool if, like, you know, they come out with this card game that we played and, you know, the big suggestion we had with the drafting was implemented. Like, that would be really cool. So, I don't know. It's kind of fun in that way, I thought.
Yeah, plus coming from a standpoint where, like, you know, we would like to design games, so being able to see more of that, you know, a part of the design process, you know, you get a chance to decide, like, if you see something good, be like, okay, this is what I want to do when I play test. Or if it's bad, you're like, okay, I am definitely not doing that when I play test.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. And then after we finished playtesting our game, there was still some extra time, and they had a current game on Kickstarter called Onslaught, and this is BFF Gaming is the company name. Onslaught, which is was on Kickstarter at the time we played, and it's like a cooperative tower defense game that was pretty quick and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it flowed quickly, and it was something different.
So also during playtesting, we sat on the floor for a game of Circle the Wagons.
That's right.
Which is a little...
They usually call them wallet
games. I was going to say, it came in a little wallet.
Yeah, it's a wallet game from Button Shy. So the whole thing is the deck or the game only has 18 cards. And then, like, the whole idea is that it would fit in your pocket or a bifold. And in the game, it's basically a drafting game. You're taking locations. Each of the cards has 4 little quadrants, and you're building out your area, and you're trying to create territories, and you get score based on the highest or the biggest territory of each type. So it was sort of like, what was that game we played? Oh, King Domino, in that your area only scored the highest, and each of the cards on the back had a different like end goal. So the game, so you draw three and you get three different end goals for each game that you play.
All right. So after the playtest hall, we swung by the vendor hall so Kiwi could buy the networks.
Yep. And I got Gil Hover to sign it, which was super exciting.
And then after that, we went and played Bosk, which Bosk was published by
Floodgate.
So Floodgate Games was one I picked out just because it looked really kind of pretty. Yep. And it played in a 1 hour session, so it seemed like something we could squeeze in. I guess a quick overview is you're putting trees down, and then the trees drop their leaves, which creates an area control game. I don't know how that happened, but so overall, I thought it was kind of surprisingly good. I thought it was going to be good, but it was better than I thought. Much more in depth than I was expecting.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you said you had picked part of it because of the art. So if we go back to our usual format, right, like that is one of the things we always talk about is if you saw this on the shelf, would you pick it up? And I think all of us would probably absolutely. It had that kind of Parks feel to it. So you had already bought that game, Eric Parks, for your friend, but it still had that kind of same National Park Service postcard artwork to it. And in fact, I think the logo for the game itself is outlined in one of those National Park Service signs. And it's got squirrels. And Squeeples.
It's got squirrels.
Squeeples.
Squeeples.
Yeah. It's again, it's a, I think we played a lot of very well put together component games and artwork. And this was no exception. I mean, the pieces, your trees were these nice cardboard cutouts that were pretty sturdy. The leaves were little wooden actual pieces. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't all just a cardboard game, right? Or plastic. It had some very nice components to it. And the different seasons, you did different things. I think summer and winter were really just scoring components. But I think that changing up of the strategy of play or mechanics, if you will, made it an interesting and engaging game, something kind of different and new out there, as well as, of course, being pleasant to look at.
So Quan Chai Moria is the artist, and I've heard his name in a bunch of different places. He was the artist for Dinosaur Island and some other stuff as well. The Dinosaur Island would be probably one of the biggest in a cryptid. Catacombs and The Game, which I just lost.
Right.
The Game.
Thanks.
For thinking about it. And like his art is super cool. And I know there's a lot of game designers out there who want to do stuff with him because of his art style.
Dinosaur Island is the park one, right?
Yeah. So basically Jurassic Park, so
The Game. It's interesting because I don't like that art style. Like, I think
really?
That's why. Because that's one of the weird games for me that like, I like the mechanics. I like how it plays. I like the theme. I like dinosaurs. I like science. But I don't want to play it. I think it's just because that 90s art style I don't like.
Yeah, it definitely screams 1980s neon.
Right. So, like, I don't know. I assume that's why that it just doesn't appeal to me is the art, because it's the only thing about it I don't like. But it's a good game.
My only complaint about Bosk was I didn't think the score sheet was big enough to fit the Squeeples. And I tweeted about it because I taught my parents and Paxton to play. And that was my one complaint. And Floodgate recommended that instead of, you know, put them on their side where they're flat and then you can stack them. And it was basically life changing. I felt real dumb. They were just like, did you try this? And I was like, I'm going to say yes, just so I don't sound stupid.
They were really great like that, though. The game must be fairly new because the person who did the demo with us, not only was she also really good at explaining the game, but she had also brought up how people had been giving them various kind of suggestions all weekend. And so they're already thinking of expansions for the game. So, and it was also, I think, one of those good experience in demos, because not only was the person giving the demo, you know, doing a great job and seemed very enthusiastic about the game, but so did everybody else at their tables, which we've talked about before at Gen Con is really important, is to have that, those people who are out there demonstrating your game have that same enthusiasm that they would at the vendor table. Because, I mean, we didn't go right away, but it was on our checklist to make sure before the vendor hall closed that we got a copy of it. So
Lorena, I believe, was her name that did our demo for us.
Look at you. Nice. Good names. Job.
All right. So after Bosque, we then went by the vendor hall for a bit. I picked up Fire in the Library by Tony Miller.
Got it signed.
Got it signed by him and John Prather.
Yep.
Prather. John Prather over. He was working the Brotherwise booth. He was also super nice.
Yep.
And then I also got Lockup by Thunderworks Games. Yep. And the artist signed it there. Which is cool because I got to tell him that the art was what initially drew me to the game again, and he was really excited about that. And then Kiwi and went and picked up Bosque.
Yep.
And I went and got some art.
All right. And then we stopped by the AEG booth, which was demoing Ecos, which will be released at Essen. And we got to sit down and play a demo of that. It's kind of like it's an ecology game where you're dropping tiles with different sort of biomes, and then you're sort of drawing out kind of element cards.
Yeah, well, I think it was grass, trees, stone, soil, water.
Sushi.
Sushi was actually soil, I think. Or
don't
rock.
Forget animal.
Yep, animal.
Sun.
Yeah, so you're drawing these sun tokens out, which will then sort of, you have cards which you basically mark each time you draw out a certain type of resource, essentially, and then when you fill up a card, it triggers that activity on the card, which kind of, it's like one of them is you drop a mountain down, or you drop an animal down, or you drop a, or you get other resources and you get different victory points and whatever different actions are. And it gets really cool because it can start to trigger combos. So you fill up one card, it gives you resources, which will then fill up another card, and you just start triggering all these different things, which is pretty cool. And then like you put down animals in certain areas, and then you'll put down, like, the one person we were playing with, she had a cheetah. And so there was just sort of a large group of birds building up, and then the cheetah came in and just wrecked house, and she got a bunch of points. And so it was a really cool game, I thought.
Yeah. It had a lot to it. And I think the way they had it set up, everybody's deck was the same. And I think they said it was like the generic starter game style. But an alternative was you could draft cards into your deck. And it's not really a deck, because when you pull out more of those cards, you could go through it and pick the one you wanted to play. So it's more of a, almost a tableau that you could draw out of, or pick, really. You're not drawing. So you could change your game based on that. So, for me, I was way behind because the cards I had didn't have any victory points. So then I started doing stuff to draw out more cards so I could get victory points.
Right. And we were playing a shortened demo version. So it didn't really, we didn't have all the cards out that you would in a normal game. So I think in a normal game, you'd probably have some victory point cards and then some combo building cards, and you could really set up a cool sort of system.
Yeah, it had a pretty cool table presence because, you know, you start with, what was it, like four hexes, I think, out, or maybe three.
Yeah.
And then I could see like in an 80, and we ended up with maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 by the time we got to the end of our demo. And I could see, because our demo was like a third of a normal game, that you'd have this huge map on the table with all these tokens and mountains and trees. And
BP, what did you think of it?
It was definitely interesting. And it did the, I don't think you guys have mentioned quite like the tiles, though, that when they came out, they were really big and thick. The ones that you drew for the various elements, right? So that table presence was just added in that the components were also of varied sizes and textures.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a bingo style. So, you know, one person was drawing those tiles out and everybody was then filling their cards simultaneous. So it did have that kind of simultaneous play to it.
Yeah, which I think is good.
Yeah, it is. It mixes stuff up.
And then after Ecos, we headed over and played Crown of Amara demo. This is the one where our demoer, this was pretty much in the last hour of the convention. And
yeah.
We sat down at the table. There wasn't really, nobody was really kind of managing the area. We finally asked and he was finishing up a previous demo. And so we're about to probably get up and leave, I feel like, when he finally came over and gave us the most detailed and boring rule description of a game ever. Again, I feel like we were just about done. But we started playing, took the first few turns kind of half-heartedly. And then by the end of it, we're pretty into it, I think.
Yeah, I think we all three of us, when we got up and started walking away, like... I think I was the first one to bring it. I was like, man, like halfway through that dude's the description of this game, I was just like, I quit. I'm ready for dinner. Let's go. And both you guys were like, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when he was explaining it too, it started, I mean, it was just one of those explanations for a game that I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it was a pretty Euro style game.
Yeah, it's a Euro game, and I felt, even though we played pretty quickly, it's a pretty heavy game.
Yeah,
I feel like maybe not compared to some, but for us it was a heavier game. So there's quite a bit of little rules and little, oh, don't forget these, and you gotta, this spot does all this and this does this, and there's all these different options. So there's a lot to it, I felt like, and he was determined to tell us each and every one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Our demo was supposed to start at 3 o'clock, and we didn't even start playing the game until almost 3:30.
Yeah, and it's a 1 hour time slot.
Yeah.
So, like, and we pretty much, I mean, we raced a bit and we rushed, but we pretty much finished it in about 35 minutes. So,
yeah,
right.
It's not a long game, but I felt like it was pretty heavy.
And could we go ahead and say who won?
I don't remember.
Yeah, who knows?
Of course you don't. Very who convenient.
Knows who? Hold on, let me look it up just so I can remember.
Who's keeping score?
Who was keeping score?
I think Kiwi keeps score for everything.
Yes, fine. I'll say it out loud.
Yes.
BP won.
Wait, did BP win Bosque too?
No.
No, I think you won Bosque.
That doesn't sound right.
No, I won that one.
Yeah, so it was Crown of Amara. Overall, I thought it was an enjoyable game. I don't know if it's quite... I would never buy it because I would never want to explain those rules to people.
Yeah. I don't know if I would play it again. I guess it would have to be... I don't know. It would have to be like I was in the right mood. You know, I've thought about this like in our past episodes when we get to this question of would you play it again? Like there are a lot of caveats we put on it and... I guess that's kind of our spin, like if it were the right group of people or not at all. And I think with this one, it would have to be that combination of both the right group of people. I already had enough food in my system, so I wasn't thinking about getting food somewhere else. Even though I won and figured out how to win, it's just, yeah, I think it's just a little bit more in depth than I really want to sit down and say. I mean, that setup, man.
Yeah, that's another reason. There's a lot of components and pieces. And
I mean, I think I would play it again. I'm not sure I would add it to the collection.
Yeah, I would play it again if somebody else explained the rules and set it up.
Yeah.
And then Kiwi flew out and BP and I played a game of Fire in the Library, which we may or may not have played correctly because we don't know how to read a rule book.
So we should back up and say that Kiwi read the rules and kind of started around with us and then had to leave. And so we tried to start it over and immediately got confused.
You know, I think we played it right. It was fun.
Yeah, we had fun. We would look at each other and be like, are we going to go for it? And I just, so many times, like just towards the end, I'm like, I'm just going to try.
It's basically a push your luck game where you're drawing cubes out of a bag, and certain ones represent books that you save, and certain ones are fire. And if you draw too many fire or fire at the wrong time, you burn down the library. Yep. And essentially, the more that books burn, the higher the value gets of the books. So they get more collectible. And then there's a bunch of other item cards that can help you either boost your score or prevent fire or do all kinds of different things. So it's a really push your luck game where you're drawn out of the bag and you're like, do I stop? Do I keep going? You know, how much do I want to burn this place down? So it's pretty fun. I feel like we just had really high scores. I don't know if that's because we were being cautious or if we were doing things wrong.
Yeah, that's, I think, where we started to question, because I feel like we went through the scoreboard like two or three times.
Yeah, we had like 250 points. I don't know if that's right. But
kind of sounds like a Great Western Trail problem.
It does. It kind of felt like that. I'm like, well, this game seems like it's taking an extra hour or day. And I really think it'd be a lot of fun with more than two people.
Yeah.
Because you'd have more people pushing their luck and causing fire, and just sort of maybe a two-player game just lasts longer because, you know, less people are screwing up and burning stuff down.
Yeah, I think I got to play like two turns and I really enjoyed it, and I wished I could have kept going and kept playing.
All right, so favorite game, event, or moment of Gen Con 2019?
I think my favorite game was probably Bargain Quest.
Okay. So the Bargain Quest demo.
Yeah. And I think my favorite moment, I guess it was a couple moments, was getting the signatures. So like being able to meet Elizabeth Hargrave and getting her signature, talking to Gil, talking to Tony, seeing it, getting their signatures, because it was super exciting to see them excited about it.
I'm going to go with game, probably Bosk. I just like, you know, just really mixing it up. Between, you know, a couple of different mechanics. Favorite moment is a toss-up between getting to see Gavin Gray Valentine, because since I have gone to his booth at so many different conventions that we have seen him at, he just goes to a lot of cons as well. He is now starting to recognize me, and that's always cool. And then getting, of course, to take a selfie with Mandy. She is just so great.
Yeah, like I feel like everybody, you know, the ones that we like specifically sought out are like some of the nicest people I've, like, I'm sure they've had like over that weekend just a ton of people coming up to talk to them and ask them questions and want to play games with them, and just the fact that they were, you know, super nice all the way through the weekend, even with all that, like, right, speaks a lot to like who they are, and it's just really cool.
My favorite game was, I'm going to say Ecos. I really like that one. I think I really like, we haven't played a lot that does those big combos, and I really kind of like that piece of it. Like that exciting build up to when the Cheetah is going to come in. I'm going to say my favorite moment was when we were walking down the hall and Kiwi randomly yelled, "Worker placement!"
Totally out of context, where I was trying to talk about something and I couldn't remember what it was, and then I just came to my mind and I yelled it louder than I should have.
BP and I were having a totally different conversation and you just yell "worker placement."
I like worker placement, what can I say?
Yeah, I think we get that.
All right, so if you want to tell us about your own Gen Con experience or things you go to cons for, and also foods that you like to eat or avoid at said conventions, hit us up at Twitter and Instagram at First Drinkcast. There are so many people at this convention that care about mechanics.
And to the one guy in England who reviewed and said he didn't want to hear about mechanics, we're sorry. There's only so many demo tables. There's only so many volunteers giving demos. Like, right, be nice to the volunteers because, yes, they're volunteering. Like. Yeah.
I was halfway to the airport and I was talking to the guy about food, and then I suddenly remembered, no, my pork chop.